And then the third aspect of that is then obviously being a doula. So like those are the three things, a writer, a tarot reader, and a doula. I'm a full spectrum doula. That means I support people through all aspects of the reproductive continuum, whether that's miscarriage, abortion, fertility journey, pregnancy, birth, postpartum, and for me, even parenthood.
Brittany Carmona Holt is a midwife's assistant, a full spectrum doula, photographer, and a very soon to be published author. From someone who never thought she would get married or even wanted kids, she's now a wife and a mom, fully immersed in birth work. Welcome to The Safe Haven. I'm your host, Amanda Lytle. The Safe Haven offers a collection of conversations about life's challenges and the pivots we make in order to keep moving forward. In the conversation today, Brittany shares her three biggest life pivots to get us started and how they've brought her into a space where she stepped away from a business that she built with her partner in wedding photography and is now a birth doula. She talks about how miscarriage solidified her desires to be a mom and how birth work has brought Brittany into a space where she's now combined her love and knowledge of birth work and tarot reading into her soon-to-be-published book called Tarot for Pregnancy. We jump in after I've asked one of our favorite questions here on The Safe Haven about biggest life pivots.
Several come to mind.
Yeah.
Is it okay if I talk about more than one?
Yes.
So maybe I'll talk about what was the first big one, because whenever I think of a pivot, to me, that means like a certain way of being, a way that I saw myself is starting to be antithetical to what I'm being called to do. Mm-hmm. And so it's like humbling because you have to admit that you didn't know yourself as well as you thought you did and that you've changed your mind. And for somebody like me, who is really, I'm an Aries moon and I'm very stubborn and I do not like to admit when I was wrong, period. But especially if I was wrong about myself, because I was very much that like rebel goth child, like, and everybody like growing up was like, oh, it's just a phase. And I'm like, it's not a phase. This is who I am. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So like, I'm used to clinging on to like, you know, my beliefs, thinking that they are forever truths about me. And I've only ever really like hurt myself in clinging to that. So anyways, big first pivot was, I was always somebody who did not want to get married. My first like thing, big essays that I wrote on my little live journal were always like anti the institution of marriage. Mm-hmm. Fucking hate marriage. Mm-hmm. I meet my now husband, Alex, when we were in New York in 2011. And I was like, fuck, I want to marry this guy. What do I do? Because like, how do I... he was just like making me rethink all of the things that I had thought to be true about myself. Mm-hmm. I wanted to marry him because I wanted to do everything there was to do with him. And marriage is the thing to do, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's also like in every other case, I don't believe that you can like enact change from the inside, or not that I don't believe it, but I don't believe in that like version of change making, especially when it comes to like the prison industrial complex or the medical industrial complex, or when it comes to policing. Like, I'm not a big fan of the whole, like, if you get in, you can make change from the inside. But I did take that mindset for marriage that, it was something I could, do my own way better by participating in it than if I just stayed on the outside and bitched about it.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, I did it all my own way. We had a kind of whirlwind romance where we said, I love you within the first week of being together. We lived long distance for our final year of college. And then when I went to pick him up at the airport after we both graduated from our respective colleges, me in Michigan, him in Texas, I proposed to him at the airport. I don't know what the original inspiration for that was. It might be Monica from Friends. It might be, but I don't know. Anywho, I did a brave and scary thing. It was fucking terrifying for me. Like, I have a video of it, and I had a whole like speech prepared of all these things I wanted to say to him. I got a ring. I did the whole thing. And I brought all my family with us to the airport to watch. And he said, yes. And so that was a big life pivot, was that I saw myself as somebody who would be perpetually single, but would take lovers. Like, that was who I had an idea of myself as. And so when it was like feeling, I mean, not, and I had been in love before. So like, this was an informed decision. This wasn't just like, oh, it's real this time. Mm-hmm. It was just, I want to have this experience with you. And so along from that comes my next big pivot, was that I never wanted children, which is funny to anybody who knows me, because I now, my whole life and livelihood revolves around the making and bringing of children into the world. Mm-hmm. That is like my entire calling. In fact, I wonder if the things that we are most averse to actually hold some wisdom for like what we're meant to do in the world.
Doesn't it seem that way? Yeah.
Yeah. If you have like a, if you're really passionate about like not doing something, I'm just always proven wrong. Like in whatever I said I'd never do, I always end up fucking doing. So I'm good. I just need to stop saying I'll never, because yeah. Anywho, that pivot looked like, it was pretty natural. It was pretty organic, but I look back on it and I think, oh, by organic, you mean reckless and unplanned for. Because now, as somebody who coaches people through their fertility journeys and is with people through their pregnancy journeys, like we definitely leapt before we made sure we had a good parachute. And it, even in the, like the literal way, I thought I was doing it more radically by being like, we're not trying to have a kid. We're just no longer not trying. We're removing the barriers that like made us trying to not try. It was absurd. Now that I say it, I feel like I sound ridiculous, especially being who I am in the world of birth work. But that was where we were at the time. I was really, and what that was rooted in, and the same as why I didn't want to get married, is that it was rooted in the fact that I had been told all my life that I should want those things, that I should want to get married, that it's my like highest pinnacle in life as an assigned female at birth person to want children. And I didn't identify with that. I was not one of the women in my family fighting to hold the babies, you know, which is like very much every woman in my family. So I just didn't, I guess I didn't want them to be right about me. I wanted to be right about me, which seems normal, you know, to want to know yourself better than people who have a really rigid idea of who you are. So when I started having those inklings, it was, I actually can date it back to, I found a poem like not long ago. It was like the first poem I wrote to my future child about how they would be the, my greatest art project. They would be the greatest poem I've ever written, because I would have written them with my body. And so that was all the way back in like, I want to say 2014, which I don't think I had even out loud admitted to myself yet that I might have changed my mind about wanting children. So it was pretty casual that we were like, we're just going to stop not trying. I got pregnant right away and I miscarried almost as quickly at 7 weeks. And then the miscarriage like solidified like, oh shit, I really wanted this more than I was allowing myself to feel, you know, because it couldn't be casual anymore. Now there's grief. Now there's admitting that there was desire there. So yeah, those were the two first big things that I feel like kind of leveled who I like identified as a person. Cause I just so saw myself in this like Sex and the City way where I would just be like single, but have my own place and take lovers who took care of me. And I would write all the time. That was what I wanted to do. I do still write. I'm still right about that part of me. Had a whole book coming out and stuff. But and then the last most recent pivot is that my partner and I, my husband and I, we created a business together in 2015 after we left New York, and it's called Sculpted Films. We're wedding videographers and photographers, and it's a beautiful job. There is nothing wrong with getting to film someone's like most beautiful pinnacle of their, one of the pinnacles of their life kind of days, you know? So that's another thing, is that like I was so against marriage and then I ended up being in the wedding industry. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that job. And yet I'm leaving it to do birth work, or not leaving. I have left it. I've given over the reins of control to Sculpted Films, all to my partner. He does all of that now. And that was very difficult because that was a business that I built from being a baby. He's the one who has all the technological skills with cameras. He's the one who does the editing. And I still filmed weddings, but I was the back end. I was all of the emails, all of the contracts, like all of the marketing. I just built that business from scratch and scrappily, not knowing what the fuck I was doing. Mm-hmm. And it was successful, is successful. It still exists. Mm-hmm. And I am pivoting to take a major pay cut to take on other aspects of like people's, you know, pinnacle of life, which is when they have children, when they have babies. Just the other day I was at a birth and the nurse asked the birthing person, how did you find Brittany? How'd you find your doula? And she was like, she was my wedding photographer. And she was like, oh, are you just like a one-stop shop for big life events? Yeah. And I'm like, kind of, yeah. But it's really cool. It's really special to do that. There's been plenty of births where, like, if it's a home birth, I'll see like photos I took at their wedding on the walls, or I was just taking postpartum photos of a family the other day, and their wedding photos that we took are on their wall. And it's a kind of really unique and special full circle experience that I can't say many people have, because I don't know how many people make the transition from wedding industry to birth work industry. But yeah, it's been completely aligned and right the whole way. So I don't feel like any kind of, you know, fear that I'm like, why are you moving to a job where you make a third of the money and work way more? Because like wedding days were already really long. That's already like 8 to 12 hour days. But I at least knew when I was going to get to go home. Whereas so like this birth I was just talking about the other day, I was there for 38 hours when the birthing person's mom was like, do you maybe want to go home and shower? And I was like, maybe I should go home and shower. But yeah. So anyways, when something is like very aligned and you know that that's where you're supposed to be, I feel like those questions of the pay cut or questions of like whether or not this will be sustainable, you can't dwell on them because it's just imperative. Mm-hmm. You just got to do it. So you don't really, I didn't think about it too much. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about the fact that I was leaving behind something that had like been rather good to us in order to do something way harder and for less money, but is absolutely far more where my passions lie. Mm. Yeah.
It's unbelievable how many times I could be feeling so paralleled with your story, just being like, I feel that. I feel that. Really? I also, with my friend Danielle, got into wedding photography and I just kind of apprenticed under her for quite a while before I went out on my own, and then actually photographed her birth as well as another friend's birth, one in hospital, one at home. And then both of them saying to me, Amanda, like your energy in the room, you should maybe consider being a doula, you know, like what a thing to do. And you don't even know if you want kids yourself. I mean, that would actually free up your availability and all of these things. So this is so right through my mind.
That's such a true thing, because many people in the birth work world only find out that that's their calling through becoming parents themselves, when really birth workers who don't have their own children are a huge commodity. Like, please, please learn that you need to be in this line of work before you have kids, because yeah, it fucks with your availability.
It definitely would.
To already have your own kids.
Yeah. Okay. This is incredible. I have got a couple questions for you, because I know some of the work that you're doing. I would love for you to tell me how you became the birth witch? You know, how did this come to be? And what was the transition officially from sculpted films into doing the work that you're doing? What steps did you have to take?
So I would say that the birth witch is a culmination of three aspects of my identity. One of them is being a writer, because I feel like that's one of my, that's my major like mode of magic weaving. And it always has been. That's kind of like the first, my first and most fundamental passion that I've had since like literal childhood. So yeah, writing as one of my magical mediums, and the fact of being a tarot reader, that's the second part. And that has been since about 2015, 2014. I was gifted my first deck when I was 16 years old, but I didn't start reading more seriously until I was about 21 or so. But yeah, so reading tarot for people and seeing just how that connects in with like their journeys on the reproductive continuum, whether that's they're on a fertility journey, whether they've experienced loss, or they're just navigating the great mysterious unknown that is the pregnancy journey, mm-hmm. preparing for birth. It just has so much to say. There's so much to be gleaned from the tarot for that, those experiences on the reproductive continuum. So I wrote a book about it because there's a lot to say. Mm-hmm. And then the third aspect of that is then obviously being a doula. So like, those are the three things: a writer, a tarot reader, and a doula. I'm a full spectrum doula. That means I support people through all aspects of the reproductive continuum, whether that's miscarriage, abortion, fertility journey, pregnancy, birth, postpartum, and for me, even parenthood. So yeah, I was looking one day for a name and that name just came to me, and I looked it up, and at the time nobody had used it. And I was like, you know what, that it sounds right. You know, it's not like there's any kind of like rhyme or anything, but it just sounds good together. I am a witch who works in the birth work world. And I'm since that I've decided on that name and claimed that name, there have been other people who have claimed that name, you know, eye roll, but they're either not witches or they're not birth workers. Mm-hmm. They're one or the other, you know. I see it. I'm like looking on pages of other quote unquote birth witches, and I'm like, oh, you're just a doula. To me, to be a witch, I'm not trying to be exclusionary or anything, and I think everybody has ability to tap into their magic, but to be a witch, you must be somebody who practices a craft. It's not like your spell work needs to look any one kind of way, but like if you're, you know, witchcraft, tarot, the occult is having a cultural moment. It's extremely esoteric and ancient, and yet here we are, and it's also trendy, you know. Mm. So like I can see people using that name because witch is currently trending, witch is currently safe to say, you know, like, and I'm somebody who benefits from that privilege as well. Like being an out witch is newly safe to mm-hmm. be, you know. Mm-hmm. And not even always, I guess, mm-hmm. but like for the most part, like we're good these days. At least white witches, white as in skin, not as in like, you know, Glenda the Good Witch or yeah. something. So yeah, the name came to me and it felt right. Still feels right. If it doesn't feel right in the future, I'll change it. Mm-hmm. I'm far less opposed to pivoting these days now that I'm used to it from the three major pivots that have uprooted my life previously.
And now you have me super intrigued to deep dive into your book. Tell me about the book and the process, because tarot for pregnancy, I think just by itself, like is quote unquote, you know, self-explanatory as that title could be. I think that there's so much more to it that's worth sharing.
Oh my gosh, there is so much more mm-hmm. to it. In fact, that title is not my favorite, but I know that it'll get to people that mm-hmm, way. Mm-hmm. But the original title for the book, and this is now the tagline for the book, is A Companion for Radical Magical Birthing Folks, which implies all the things I want it to imply. One, radical being that this journey to and in parenthood is an opportunity to align yourself deeper with your ethics and integrity and make decisions from that place. We need parents who are making decisions from an integrity aligned place, even if those decisions are just where to birth, even if those decisions are just what's going to happen to your baby in the first few moments of their life. We know like just how significantly those moments imprint on us and inform who we are able to become, inform our nervous systems for who we're able to become as humans in this world. And if we're starting to make choices about our pregnancies, our births, our postpartum periods, and our parenting from an ethically aligned place, it has huge implications for like ripple effect, you know, because all of those babies are going to grow up and, you know, benefit or not, you know, in whatever kind of way from those really early choices we make. So that's the radical component. The magical component is that this book is trying to, I don't like to say empower because that implies that like you didn't have it in the first place, but like maybe just remind people of their power, because I've seen really sovereign people who, once they become the more or less host for another human being, are really willing to give their power away. In any other medical scenario, they would be advocating for themselves. They would be making sure, they would be getting second opinions. And then when it comes to being a pregnant person, it's all of a sudden these doctors are infallible and they know best and doctors are God. And I'm just going to listen to you, because there's so much fear about potentially losing your baby or potentially losing your life. So we're really like ready to shut down our own intuitions if it's contradictory to what the quote unquote experts are saying. So that's the magical component, is to remind people that your intuition has really valid and incredibly important wisdom when it comes to your path to becoming pregnant, your path to parenthood in general. The companion part is that I like to give things, little pieces along the way that kind of tend to and hold people through this journey, whether it's journaling prompts to explore like biases they hold about birth and what they think birth has to be, or whether it's journaling prompts to explore like ancestral cycles that they have the potential to break in becoming parents, or exercises to visualize that they are safe and held to soothe their nervous system, or recipes to nourish their bodies in preventative food medicine, or honestly, it's just me as a doula in a book. So that's the companion aspect. It's everything that I say to my clients. And I get a little bit, I don't get tired, but like, I don't love repeating myself. So I'm like, I'm just going to write a book. And then I know I'm still going to have to repeat myself, but that was the thought, honestly, which is kind of silly, I know, but yeah. And then birthing folks is acknowledging that not only women give birth.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
All kinds of people have uteruses. And they're up until at the time when I started writing this book, I didn't know of a single book that was using gender inclusive language. Mm-hmm. And now that I've written the book, my dear friend, Dr. Midwife, Dr. Stephanie Mitchell, has written her book, The First Time Parents Childbirth Handbook. And she's using inclusive language. Bless it. So I have a book to recommend to my clients that I can feel comfortable recommending to any client. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah, the language is so important. Hey friends, The Safe Haven will be right back after this quick break.
Yeah. So the name Tarot for Pregnancy is actually rather flat and dull compared to like what I wanted to convey, but it's there in the tagline.
Mm-hmm. Through the writing process, because you and I had spoken previously about this, the writing process can be a lot. So for anyone listening, can you share a bit about the steps that you take in order to just make sure that you are uninterrupted and what the creative process looks like for you?
Oh, to make sure I'm uninterrupted. I'm interrupted all the time. My partner now knows that I'm not like being rude or whatever if I'm like not looking up from my phone. If I just keep writing, He's no longer offended by me not prioritizing whatever he has to ask me at the moment, because if I'm writing, I'm writing. But I still have a 4-year-old, so I'm interrupted all the time. But I will say that my inspiration, and I'm somebody who has ADHD, I do not like sit down and force myself to write. That is a mode of working that just does not work for me and is like pretty triggering of like bad childhood school experiences, you know? So I just like have the privilege that I can navigate around that aspect of myself and I can write at the speed of inspiration. So that oftentimes looks like 2 a.m, you know, like whenever I give myself enough quiet time, enough brain space for those thoughts to come through. My only discipline is that when it comes through, write it the fuck down, Brittany. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it's not very organized. My notes app on my phone is in shambles, but it's getting the job done enough that I'm like jotting down everything as it comes to mind. Honestly, Instagram had been a huge like kind of archive of my writing long before it was ever a book. Like before I ever thought in my wildest dreams that I would be a birth worker, let alone a birth worker who writes a book about pregnancy, I was writing very openly and honestly about my experiences with miscarriage, my experiences throughout pregnancy, my experience with a traumatic birth experience, and my experiences with postpartum, like all the things nobody tells you about. And I received all of this like great feedback up on it from my followers or people who I didn't even know were my followers. I don't like saying my followers, sounds weird. I've never like said that before. Rewind. I don't like it. People who are reading, I don't know. Doesn't that sound super like Messiah-y? Sorry.
I feel like I'm getting I use the word community, but I guess the
community. But it definitely wasn't at the time. I don't think I could have gotten to claim that yet because I hadn't cultivated that whatsoever, because I had no idea that there was a need. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just like same old teenage Brittany writing in her live journal, being very honest about what was happening to me and about what I was learning. One of the major things was that I was, you know, had a lot of that typical white woman outrage that I had to be a pregnant person to learn about the Black maternal mortality rates. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why did I have to be in this world of pregnancy and birth to learn these like egregious statistics? And yet most people don't know of that unless you have a reason to be in this world. And that's obviously very intentional. Mm-hmm. In my line of work all the time, we're saying like, if you don't know about it by now, then it's because you don't want to know about it. And I'm like, yes. And everything to do with the reproductive continuum is purposefully kept like hush hush from us, because that's how we remain uninformed and unempowered. Mm-hmm. And therefore we can just be another number in the system. Births are the number one reason why anybody goes to the hospital. That's the highest like thing that hospitals do. The highest number of any one thing that they do is to give birth. And it's a physiologic function. It's not even necessarily an inherently medical event every time. So like there's some very real like monetary reasons why they don't want us to know the realities of birth in the US, you know? What were we talking about?
The things that you were writing on your post.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wasn't like being brave, you know, I wasn't like writing in a way, that I knew I was making myself vulnerable. I was just, I've always been a kind of TMI type of person. And that's been a through line of my writing, is telling the whole truth in like a way, or my whole truth, you know, because I was talking about my own experiences in a way that doesn't shy away from the taboo, that doesn't shy away from like the, you're not supposed to talk about that stuff, you know? And so I really found a deeper level of my voice when I had my miscarriage, and everybody culturally does not know how to treat you once you've had a miscarriage. They do not know the right things to say. They get really, I don't want to say upset, but they get exasperated when you're still grieving that, when you're still mourning that. we just don't know how to show up for people who have had any kind of loss of any kind. And so I was really comfortable being loud about that, because at the time I was grieving and I was like angry, you know, like my uncle who had gotten to live a full life being his bigoted self, honestly, like died a couple of weeks after I had my miscarriage. And I was bitter that everybody got to like mourn him out loud. And my kid didn't even get a chance to live their life, you know, and it was just me and my partner who were mourning that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was bitter. And when I'm bitter, it's really easy for me to not care about like, oh, you're not supposed to talk about that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, fuck that. Mm-hmm.
But I love that that translates into your book. I think that that's really, really powerful writing.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
No, totally. I think it's also because it is also, it's super parallel with why a lot of these really authentic, in the moment, sharing experiences and emotions, posts, blogs, people tend to have more of that viral kick to it, is because people are like, oh my gosh, I relate to that. That's exactly mm-hmm. what I experienced in my miscarriage or in yeah. my relationship breakup, whatever. It's really powerful.
Yeah.
Because it's relatable.
And there were people who I was a little like, the one thing that I was aware of that I was self-conscious of and like kind of afraid might happen was that if I was honest, that people who had gone through the same thing would be like, I went through that and had to do it silently, so why can't you just shut up about it already? You know, which is totally what a lot of people who haven't processed their loss trauma or their birth trauma or whatever, people do that to each other all the time, especially family members. But so I would receive messages from people who I know had had losses, and it was a wall of text, and I'd be like, my stomach clenches, like, are you going to have some shit to say? Because I know this has happened to you and that you just bore it silently, you know? And that wasn't what was happening. They were thanking me for saying it. And it's not because I'm special or anything, but I really do believe that when you're honest about what happened to you, you free somebody else up to be honest too, you know? Like, the only reason why people don't share their stories is because they were told that they can't, told that nobody cares, or to just get over it, or at least you know you can get pregnant, or all of the at least. But yeah, when you're open and honest, it doesn't just like teach people who haven't been through that, like how to be in community with you, because it does do that. I hope that's what I thought I was trying for. I was like, I was basically just trying to throw out a lifeline of like, I don't want to have to stop being friends with you all, so can you please just stop saying dumb fucking shit to me about my miscarriage?
Yeah.
But it was the people who were most affected by it were people who had been through it, who like could see themselves in what I was saying. And not that like I have that ability to give or take anything like that away from them, but like they at least saw it as permission that they could live out loud in the same kind of way. If I were to say anything that characterizes my writing, it's that I just live everything out loud. Like I almost think that I should probably have a clause about that in my contract of like, if you're going to be one of my clients, I'm going to learn a lot from being your doula. I'm going to learn a lot from your birth experience. And even though I'm not going to ever tell your story for you, and I'm not ever going to name names unless you wanted me to, you can see, like, you'll be able to see what I learned from your birth show up in my writing. Inherently, it can't not, you know, like we're supposed to take our experiences and learn from them. But yeah, I'm very much somebody who like squeezes every single drop of what there is to learn out of an experience. And I do that by writing about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I love the fact that we get to have these kinds of conversations. I love the work that you're doing. Your content online just keeps me so intrigued and interested. You are such a gift. Yeah, I feel really honored to just be sharing space with you. Big, big time.
That's very nice. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, guess what? I have my only three scripted questions of the entire podcast. They are the safe haven style questions. Are you ready?
Sure.
What are you most proud of?
I want to say, I think it's probably like, I'm supposed to say my child, but I'm not going to say that. And I'm not going to say that for a very important reason, because I am somebody who, I come from a community. I'm not self-made. I don't say that. Like, I have a very supportive family and community around me, but I used to really get irked when my own parents would say they're proud of me. I'd be like, why? You had nothing to do with this. Right. Which is so rude. But like, I now, as a parent, I see it, because everything that Kahlo is, I'm like, that's all you, bud. Like, better or worse, you are you. Mm-hmm. And I guess I can be proud in like a, from a distance way. But to me, pride is something that like you genuinely had a hand in like it happening, I guess, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I always tell people after their births that I'm proud of them. And I always make it known that like, I don't have any right to be proud of you, you know, like I don't have any ownership, but this was all you, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah. So if I'm talking about like something I'm proud of that I have ownership over, that I like actually feel like I get to be proud of, is probably the fact that I wrote a book when I'm somebody who has ADHD and hasn't written anything long form ever. Like, I, before this, I'm a poet, like first and foremost. I always loved the idea of writing a romance novel. That's like what was my introduction to even loving reading, because I used to think, oh, I just don't know how to read. I can't read. And then I found like raunchy romance novels and suddenly could read. So that was what I always wanted to write, but like it takes actual discipline, because it's not coming from, it comes from imagination instead of experience. It comes from like making it up instead of like divine download. Maybe people divinely download their romance novels. I don't know. Maybe they do. I don't know of anyone who does though. I think it's more disciplined to write nonfiction personally. Mm. So I'm really fucking proud that I wrote what ended up being a long ass book that feels whole, you know, that doesn't feel like there's a lot of gaps. I'm sure as time goes on, I'll be like cringing that I didn't include this or that or whatever. But I think it's pretty special as somebody who like got not very good grades in school, even in the subjects that I liked, that I fucking published a book. Like, I was just telling my husband, I was like, oh shit, we're about to have our 10-year college reunion. He's like, ugh, not going to that. And I was like, I'm going to go. I'm a published author. I'm going to go and I'm going to brag.
What would you like to be known for? Cool segue into that.
I want to be known for being like a MILF. And I say that because I'm spelling MILF with a Y, M-Y-L-F. Mom, you'd like to fuck. Mm-hmm. And I say that not because I'm necessarily thinking about who would L to F me, but because I want to be the kind of matriarch who fully embodies her sensuality and shows a blueprint for other matriarchs of their own families that you can be both. There is no like Madonna whore dichotomy. That's purely a Christian colonial concept that I full-heartedly reject. I have an OnlyFans. I have my partner take nudes of me all the time and I share them on Instagram so that my other more important posts can get attention, because that's how it fucking works on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that I need to be either or. I don't think that I need to suddenly be quote unquote modest now that I'm a mother. If anything, motherhood helped me tap into like a deeper layer of my sensuality than I even knew before, particularly after going through the birth portal. I feel like I've leveled up, you know. Birth was like a certain, if we're talking video game speak, my husband will love this when he listens to this. Birth was like the boss at the end of the game and I beat it. And now we're at this like new level. And I'm not saying that you have to go through that in order to like tap into deeper sensuality. But the point is that this like virginal idea that we have of mothers makes no fucking sense. Mm-hmm. Like, we're usually very sexual and that's why we got pregnant in the first place, you know? So I would like to be known as a hot mom, a MILF.
Honestly, so much of what you just said in that answer, I'm like, yeah, 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 keep going. Like, I love your language. I love your perspectives. I love how you just weave it all together. Okay, so my last question is,
ready.
If you had a message for everyone listening, what would it be?
That's a lot of people, Amanda. You know. I'm filing through the archive in my brain of tarot readings, because whenever I'd give a tarot reading, I end up saying a lot of common refrains. You know, there ends up being a lot of repetition and message that is still unique and right for whoever I'm reading for, but like, it just keeps getting repeated. Let me think. I remember being in writing class in college, and I wrote a short story about a guy who was like a playboy who got a lot of pussy, and I turned it in, and my professor was like, maybe write about something that you know about. Like, I don't know what it is to be a man who gets a lot of pussy. I don't really know why I wrote that. I think I was in like a weird self-loathing phase of my life. But what the medicine in that was, the writing about what you know. I think like you can really mine your life for gold, and like we each have our own medicine to give. Like, I'm not saying everybody needs to become an author or a podcast host or an Instagram influencer or whatever the ways it is that we reach people these days, but like there's medicine in your truth that like somebody needs to hear. Not everybody. Like, I know I'm not for everybody. Nobody is, but like you're gonna free somebody by telling the truth about your life, you know? And it's not like there's any rush, honestly. I'm very careful to tell people that in my tarot readings, that there is no rush, because often that's a very triggering experience to talk about the kind of truths that would free somebody else to be honest in their own experiences. So take as long as you need. What's meant for you is not going to miss you. That's another one. It's not me who said that. Like, that's a common phrase, but like we live in such a like scarcity society that it's like, if I don't add my voice to the conversation, or if I don't take advantage of this opportunity, but I don't really have the capacity for it, like we feel like we're going to miss out, you know? And I can't remember where I've heard it from first, but I've heard it from a million people since. What's meant for you is not going to miss you. Be honest about your life. Because there, it really is like so much there. I don't think I realized that until I sat down to write a book. Was like, I used to think like, I don't have like a whole lot of what's my experience. We tend to like downplay our own experiences unless they're really extreme, you know, unless you know you have like some ridiculous traumatic ass story. That's the only people we tell like, you should write a memoir one day too, you know, like, but it doesn't always have to be like this intensely extreme story for it to resonate with somebody in a way that is like whatever medicine they need to hear at that moment. So I think we all have something of that to share. And I feel really strongly about it, because like, I don't want to be perpetuating these hierarchies, you know, where I'm on this. I feel like when you publish a book, you are inherently positioning yourself as an expert in some kind of way. And like, I don't know how to not do that yet, but I'm trying to not do that. I really don't want to be seen as the expert of anything. Cause I think we're, in fact, the book is trying to get across like that you are your own expert in you, in your body, in your baby. You're the only one with expertise level of understanding of your body and your baby. So I really want to encourage people to like share what it is that they're called to share. So that way I'm not alone, I guess. It's selfish. I don't want to be the only one. And I'm definitely, absolutely not the fucking only one, I should say. I definitely want to make that clear. I'm not the only one. But yeah, nobody needs these like fake ass versions of us anymore. You know, it's either like, be real or be done at this point.
Mm-hmm. I totally feel that.
Yeah. Feels rude.
Excellent. Where can people find you online?
My Instagram is @BrittanyTheBirthWitch. Brittany is spelled B-R-I-T-T-A-N-Y.
I have loved this conversation. Every conversation we have, I'm just like, this is so good. Like, can it get better? And it always does. I don't know how, but it does. And I am just so grateful for you and your time and the work that you're doing. I cannot wait for your book and the pre-recording chats. Just thank you so, so much for that.
No worries. No problem.
Yeah. I'd love to stay in touch. This has been great.
Yeah, I'm sure we will.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Amanda.
Yeah. Thank you.
Very safe haven.
Yeah. I'm so glad you were a part of it. Brittany, thank you so much for joining me as a guest on the Safe Haven. As mentioned, I really love and admire you and the work that you're doing, and I'm so happy to be connected. To everyone listening, I recognize the privilege that comes with my platform, and I'm committed to creating a safe, brave, and inclusive space with intention. If this episode has hit you right in the heart or inspired you in any way, please screenshot the screen while you're listening, send it to your friends, and share it in your Instagram stories. Please be sure to tag us at the Safe Haven Podcast so we can personally thank you for it. If you're able to write a review or leave a juicy 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, that really helps this podcast grow. For more great podcasts, check out frequencypodcastnetwork.com, and I will talk to you next week.